Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today's podcast is going to be a four questions podcast with Rosie Grace. You might know from the last podcast that Rosie Grace and Nate Hapke have brought three films to the festival circuit so far. Actually, probably more. I know of three. They brought She and Her to Film Invasion in LA in 2019, Rideshare to Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2020, and To the Moon and Back came to Film Invasion LA in 2020. And as far as the four questions go, Nate did it back in September 2018. So here we are, much later, and we get to hear from Rosie. By the way, the reason Rosie didn't do it back in 2018 was because that was before she and Nate started collaborating. So it wasn't like I played favorites back then. Needless to say, I'll be recommending you watch all the films that Rosie has been involved in. And you can find some of them on the Discover Indie Film TV series. But before I blab on any further, let's just listen to Rosie's answers to the Discover Indie Film four questions. Oh, wait, I always say what they are, don't I? Do I need to? I'll do it one last time, maybe. Favorite films, an underrated film, an overrated film, and a lesser-known film people should seek out. Okay, let's listen to Rosie's answers.
You have to... I thought about all of them beforehand, but so the first question was favorite movie, right?
Favorite, and theoretically three. You can go longer if you want.
Okay. So the top one is 100% The Princess Bride. It's just been a favorite of mine since I was a kid. And there's an emotional level to it of my parents watched that movie when they were dating. So then as a kid, they showed us this movie about an epic love story and then also had the connection of like how it was a part of their love story. So I was already sort of going to have to love it. But it's also such a brilliant movie because things that I love blend humor with real heart. It's why I really like this sort of darker comedy, dramedy trend that's coming out right now. But it's what Princess Bride does so well is it's hilarious. It's funny. It's ridiculous. There are rodents of unusual size and Andre the Giant. It's a perfect, wonderful, weird, amazing movie. And it's based on a novel that's a satire. I actually read the novel that inspired the movie and it was hilarious. Because the whole thing is written as though it takes itself so seriously and you realize that it was a joke all along. So I love that feeling of being in on the joke. And so it's this very funny movie, but ultimately at its core, it's about love. And it's about the crazy things we do for love, whether it's the love of our parents or the love of a significant other or the love of our friends. And I really, really love the way they told that story. I love the way that it makes me feel, even though I'm watching it for the thousandth time. And it is also probably the most quotable movie out there.
It is up there with anything. And yeah, repeat watching. There's so much depth to it. Mm-hmm. And it really is one of the funniest things.
Oh my God. And it holds up. I still laugh. I've heard the joke so many times. I've been hearing that joke multiple times a year for the past 27 years.
Well, and the performances, and it really is. It's from the Spinal Tap crew. Mm-hmm. It's Rob Reiner and Chris Guest and all of them. I think one of the funniest things in it for me is when Mandy Patinkin just like looks and goes and just runs out of the room.
Yep.
How funny is that? Mm-hmm. Physical comedy.
They nail it.
Yeah, actually, my life partner / girlfriend / everything, that's her number one.
She's got a good taste. And Nate actually got me, I don't remember if it was for my birthday or Christmas or something, you got me a copy of the book about the making of the movie.
And it was written by Carrie Ells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it ties back into this whole thing about me loving behind the scenes stories because he actually got me a book of it's basically the behind the scenes features, but in a written version.
He got you the poster frame.
No, he does love a framed poster though. But so I got my little behind the scenes fix for that movie too, which is pretty awesome. There's some funny stories about Andre the Giant on that movie.
The amazing thing is that I'd never seen The Princess Bride before you introduced it to me.
Really?
Yeah.
But
really?
We didn't even watch it together.
You didn't see it growing up.
No. Wow.
We didn't watch it together.
Yeah, I thought we did.
Mm-mm. I introduced you to Indiana Jones, which is my second favorite.
I don't think I watched Princess Bride
with you.
Well, we should watch
it. I'm misremembering. Okay, then we'll watch it again.
You slipped out your second favorite now.
Yeah,
so by the way, Princess Bride for me is a college film.
Which is kind of sad that your parents went saw it on a date.
And then, well, no, they were dating after college in their 20s. So,
right.
Yeah. And then for me, it was a growing up film. So yeah. that's the timeline of the movie. But I kind of love that. I love how a movie can be a moment for so many people. It's a different moment for so many people. It's either something you grew up with or you remember when it came out or you saw it years later and it was a classic. I love that one thing can be so many things to so many people. It's one of the beautiful things about film.
I also love, because I've seen so many, I mean, I've watched everything, and I've seen so many films that quote The Princess Bride, mm-hmm. either through performance or actual lines. I think that's what's so amazing about it. Because when I watched it for the first time, I'd seen all of these other movies that are quoting it and stuff, and I was like, oh, that's mm-hmm. that's what that's from. Oh, that's what that's from. So I had that sort of repeated thing coming up.
It's a good one. It stopped just being a movie and it started becoming, it became a phenomenon. You know, it is its own pop culture.
It absolutely
standalone,
is.
Standalone, amazing. I'm
kind of surprised it's not a regular midnight movie.
It should be.
I actually just got a notification that it's playing on the rooftop at the Noya House.
Oh, that sounds fun.
For their summer cinema series.
Okay, well, I know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Well, I love the midnight movie thing. So sort of tying into what I'm about to tell for my second favorite, Nate and I each had a movie that the other had never seen. And I had never seen Clue. So I watched Clue with him because it's one of his favorites. And we recently went and saw it at a midnight screening at the Vista, right?
Yeah.
In Los Feliz, which is this awesome historical movie theater. For anybody listening who's not LA-based, it's such a cool place to see a movie.
The Egyptian.
Yes. And if you're going to go see a movie at midnight, and if it's going to be Clue, you know it's going to be with people who really, 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 really love Clue.
Dressed up. Quoting
everything. Along with it. It felt like a Rocky Horror screening.
Yeah, that's what they turn into.
It was incredible.
It was so much fun. The entire audience did the flames bit, so it was really fun.
Yeah, and not to make this about me, but it was just like, we went to go to that, and I remember leaving the theater that night. I mean, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. Just feeling like so, I found my people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's like you were going to church. That was church
great.
For you.
Yep.
That was great.
That's so exactly wonderful. What it was. It was church.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah.
So going into my second favorite is going to, it's not going to make sense when I say it's a three-way tie, but it's a three-way tie. And it's a three-way tie because of thematically what these movies mean to me. One of the movies is the exchange that I made with Nate was I watched Clue with him because he had never seen Indiana Jones,
Raiders
of the Lost Ark. Yeah. And yeah. I grew up on the three original ones. And Raiders of the Lost Ark, obviously, is always my favorite. Marion is definitely the best of all the Indiana Jones girls. and I love that movie. And so that was one that Nate watched with me because he had never seen it. But my three-way tie that are thematically linked is The Empire Strikes Back, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
Mm.
There are a lot of things connecting these three movies. The first one is that they're all part of a trilogy because we don't have to talk about the movies that exist outside of those trilogies. Because all of them have spawned later sequels that have never been as well received as the first three. I love all three of them because they are all adventures. They are all genre films. They are all action adventure movies. They all follow, you know, your traditional hero's quest. But I love them all for different reasons. I love Indiana Jones for how sharp and funny it is, for the physical comedy we were talking about. Oh my God, it's so alive there. Obviously, you also have the Harrison Ford parallel between at least two of those movies. Empire Strikes Back is my favorite of the Star Wars films. It's probably one of the only times I will tell you that a sequel is better than the first one. And the Lord of the Rings, Two Towers is back to that whole, I was obsessed with the feat of making movies. And all three of those movies are not easy, small, cheap movies to make. Those were all blockbuster movies, and they're all icons in their own right. Those are three incredible trilogies that are people who took this crazy idea that you can somehow see in your mind's eye and got it made. They made those stories real, whether those stories were set in the middle of the jungle in some ancient temple or on a spaceship in a galaxy far, far away or in Middle Earth. And that to me, that movies like that can still, that yeah. they got made, that they created such an incredible standard. That's the kind of thing I want to make.
Right. You appreciate the world building.
100%. And I clearly appreciate a good Harrison Ford performance. I hadn't even realized there was like links like that when I was thinking about it. I was just sort of thinking like my three favorite epics.
Yeah. Well, and I'm with you on Two Towers, by the way. I think Two Towers is the best of the three.
It really is. And it was like, when you look at what they had to go through to make that, it's insane. While they were making that, Viggo Mortensen broke his toe kicking a prop helmet too hard. They were shooting the scenes at Helm's Deep in the rain under these rain machines. Everyone was soaking wet and angry. Like, it was the things they went through to make that, it was crazy, and it's incredible.
It's an incredible film.
It really is.
Incredible feat. So, yeah, I was one of those people who was annoyed that they had to wait for the third film to get any Oscars.
Yeah, me too. But then at least whenever they did get those Oscars, they got them for everything.
They got for everything, which was made that year's Oscar pool pointless.
It really did. But I was, at that point, didn't really even understand what an Oscar pool was because I was not in the industry yet. I was like, oh, this is fun. The movie that I love won a lot of awards.
Raiders is classic. Raiders is Empire.
Classic.
And you enjoy the Star Wars. I am actually New Hope would be my favorite of the Star Wars, but what are you going to do? I'm not going to arm wrestle you over it.
New Hope is great too. That's the beauty of favorites, is everybody gets to have theirs, and your favorite being one thing never has to invalidate someone else.
Does Empire speak to you? Do you love the Yoda sequences?
Oh, God, who doesn't love the Yoda sequences? it speaks to me. I think that I love A New Hope, but New Hope just constantly, the whole thing. Obviously, if you think of it in a trilogy, A New Hope is just the first act. And A New Hope, to me, I think it was just the first act. And so much happens in Empire Strikes Back, and the stakes get so much higher. And not to mention, I'm a sucker for Han and Leia's romance. And there is just something about those two and their love-hate that comes through in that one that's amazing. And still gives me butterflies. See, it all comes back to Harrison Ford.
There you go.
Which is funny, because as a kid, I used to tell people I was going to marry Luke Skywalker. So clearly my tastes have shifted.
Not Mark Hamill.
Yeah, Mark Hamill's great and stuff, but no, I wanted to marry Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, yeah.
That was what I would tell people. And my mom thinks that's hilarious to this day. She's like, I'm like, look, sometimes the fictional characters just
better. He was a good kid, though. Yeah. Yeah. Han Solo, not really marriage material.
Scrappy nerf herder.
As you can see what happened from his progeny. But anyhow.
But you know what? The beauty of that is Harrison Ford is now like Hollywood's grumpy grandpa. And just he's so over it. But in the funniest way, I'm kind of obsessed with his.
He was
like,
over it early.
Not giving
One of my favorite stories is, and Mark is obviously the nicest guy ever.
Oh, he's so cool.
He's so cool.
He's so cool.
But when they were shooting Jedi, I believe like there was like a signature line at one point while they were shooting, and like, you know, kids were lining up. And Mark Hamill was signing "May the Force be with you," and Harrison Ford was signing "Go Force Yourself."
That's iconic, and it makes so much sense. And then I'm talking about both of them, but let's all be honest. My one true forever inspiration, icon, love is going to be Princess Leia. Because the sad thing is, even when we were kids, you still weren't always getting the most broad representation.
Not at all. Yeah. No. She was strong.
And like, yeah, there's all the gross stuff that came afterwards about like George Lucas telling her she couldn't wear a bra because there was no underwear in space.
But there wasn't.
But you know, but that aside, she was still a pretty kick-ass character with her pistols, and she saved the guys on more than one occasion and had her own story arc and had her own reason for being there and her own planet to avenge.
For its time, it was fairly feminist and
in a lot
courageous.
Of ways, yeah, not necessarily by today's standards, but absolutely. And
yeah, it's funny because when you show it to an 11-year-old female today, she's a damsel in distress a bit too much, you know,
and not
compared
even too
to
much,
Captain Marvel.
The thing is, you can be a damsel in distress. I think the idea is just have enough roles for women where they can be everything, where you can find a movie and find yourself, whatever that is. And I love. Oh, I lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry.
You're going to say you love what they did in Force Awakens.
Oh, no, I remember now. Okay. So the other thing for it that's so funny to me is, you know, in this whole Star Wars building universe, right, where they're like, we're going to make a Han Solo prequel, and we're going to do this prequel, and we're going to do that prequel, and a Boba Fett prequel. I'm like, where is my Princess Leia prequel? She was raising a freaking resistance, and you don't want to make a movie about that? I don't care what Boba Fett was doing. Let me see Princess Leia being a princess. And the only reason I'm glad they haven't made that yet is because I want to be the one to write it.
That is so fucking true. That is so fucking true that of all the characters to get their own story.
Yeah.
I don't care about seeing, you know, I know there hasn't been really buzz about a Luke one, but like, I don't need to see Luke being a farmer.
They were about Luke.
Really?
The trilogy was, they call it the Skywalker saga.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant prequels. I thought you meant for a prequel. I'm like, we don't need a Luke prequel. We have a Luke trilogy. Yeah,
we have everything. Yeah, but Leia definitely deserves.
She was doing cool stuff. So I get fired up about that. Sorry, I'm yelling. I've broken the ears of anybody listening to this podcast. Like, no,
it's pretty good at not popping. It's good.
Okay. So my third favorite is sort of tying back to what I love about, I was talking about, I love the satire elements of Princess Bride. Kingsman.
That's such a good movie.
Kingsman is one of my favorite movies. And
recent, but
kind of flawless. Amazing. Mm-hmm. And look, the second one was fun and fine.
So strange.
But it was fine.
I'm making a face because I thought the second one might have been the worst.
It was so disappointing because the first one was so good. I liked the sequel just because I got to see Elton John have more fun than I think Elton John has ever had in his life. But the first Kingsman is incredible.
Yeah. Incredible.
It is smart. It is funny. It is sharp. It is somehow perfectly, achieves the balance of loving something and being an homage to it while also ruthlessly skewering it. Yes. It is a love letter and a comedy roast all at once, and you laugh the entire way. And you know what? It gets you emotionally too. Because if we're pretending the sequel never happened, the whole losing Colin Firth thing, it's done in the most beautiful way because that sequence in the church is incredible.
Yeah.
But it's still, you're sad at the end of it. You care that he's gone. You care about the characters even though they've been making you laugh the whole time. And it does not hold back from the gore. The whole rainbow exploding head clouds might just be my favorite campy way I've ever seen a character die.
Some of the best action directing.
Oh,
At least in a new way, in terms of the coverage was just incredible. Because I feel like, you know, it's hard sometimes to reinvent the wheel and sort of what the expectations are of those types of sequences. But it just felt new. It was kind of how I felt when I watched Wonder Woman with what Patty Jenkins was doing in those sequences.
Oh God, Wonder Woman's up there too. Except for the third act. Wonder Woman was great.
Oh, where you had to have the big battle, like everything up until
such
that point.
Such a heartbreaking disappointment. Because
you can tell the entire movie was incredible, and you can tell that was what the team wanted to do, and you can tell the DC was like, "We'll let you keep everything you love if you put in this giant fire monster, and if you give us an epic battle with it."
You need that final flat two shot where it's just this huge wide, these two people, you might as well be playing a fucking video game.
And there's no drama to it because you know the outcome.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But like prior to that, I mean, some of those,
an incredible film.
The first act is perfect.
It's great.
The first act is amazing.
And the second act where she's running through the battlefield with the,
the World War I sequence.
Oh my God. You know,
that's a weeper.
And the studio wanted to cut that. She had to fight for them to keep that scene.
Yeah.
I can't wrap my head around it.
I don't see the point. I don't see the point in having that film without letting Wonder Woman open up that can.
Completely. Mm-hmm. Completely. Some of the action sequences in that, though, just were so choreographed and directed.
That whole first fight scene on the island, you really see Robin Wright be her badass Princess Buttercup evolution.
Yeah, look at that. You got actually, Wonder Woman's not on your list, but how great was it to see Robin Wright
so cool.
as the
so
Elder cool. Stateswoman?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. She's awesome.
Actually, my complaint about Wonder Woman, I just wanted the whole film to just take place on Paradise Island.
Just give me a prequel that is just that.
Let it end with her going off. I didn't need anything else, actually. I just wanted that
That'd
world.
That'd be incredible.
I just wanted that world. That world's so much more interesting than coming back and seeing us.
Oh, the dreams of a world without men.
Right?
Well, don't worry. Casey Affleck made a movie about a world without women.
So yeah, that doesn't really surprise me. So, but those are my top. Those are your tops.
All right, cool. You managed to squeeze in five or six, actually, which is okay,
but
admirable.
Because my second place award basically just goes to the classic epic.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if you'd chosen the Temple of Doom.
I could have had all
been
three.
The number two. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been the number, the sequels for all of them.
But out of the original three indies, it's probably my least favorite. Because it doesn't have Sean Connery.
Well, I don't even... Well, okay, so you like the third.
That's why the third is
good.
I mean,
for me, it's actually... I'll be the nerd who goes, people shouldn't even talk about Indiana Jones. It's just Raiders of the Lost Ark mm-hmm. and two films that shouldn't be made.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there you go. I didn't mind the third one. The third one was kind of fun.
It was fun because Sean Connery yeah. and I bet Harrison would have refused to do it if he probably wasn't paired with Connery.
Probably.
Yeah. Although I guess he did the fourth, which I didn't see. I don't know.
Oh, you that don't need to. You don't need to.
They probably gave him a lot of money.
Yeah.
I was fine until it was Aliens.
There's aliens in it?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I spoiled it. Now
no, you didn't. That might have been... Shia LaBeouf in Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, poor mm-hmm. Shia.
The only good thing about it is they brought Marion back.
They did?
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the indie movies, they sort of do exist in that James Bond-esque universe where the love interest was really just isolated to that one movie.
I love her so much.
And they do bring
her
back. And I was like, all right, well, at least if you're going to pick someone to bring back...
She's one of my all-time favorite actors. I mean, Starman.
Mm-hmm. She's awesome.
And everything. Yeah. Karen Allen, right? Am I remembering
that?
I bet that better be right. Or I'm editing.
Just cut it out.
Right, well, what's your underrated?
My underrated is so there is, if you wanted to be just sort of basic, you could call it a rom-com. There is a really, really wonderful movie with Daniel Radcliffe and Zoe Kazan called What If, and it is. It's very much the When Harry Met Sally, and it's that exploration, because I do love Harry Met Sally. It's that exploration of whether or not women and men can be just friends. But it is the most charming, funny, beautiful, heartbreaking, feel-good movie you could watch. It also stars Adam Driver as the kooky best friend. It's a really solid cast. The two of them have crazy chemistry, and it's a really, really, really good movie. And if anybody ever wants to feel good, and laugh and, you know, cry a little, but ultimately feel really happy at the end, they should watch it. But for some reason, like, nobody really knows about it. And I think that's the Daniel Radcliffe effect, where if it's not Harry Potter and it's not him naked in a play with a horse, nobody really cares, which is a shame because he's a really talented actor.
He's really good. And I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I'd heard of it.
It's really good.
And
it's,
I think he's vastly underrated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He is. And the other fun thing about this movie is when I was working in development, the company I was working for, the LA office of a Toronto-based company. And they shot, and I think set in Toronto. And so there's a diner that you see them eating in, and they actually have a big fight in the diner. And I have been to that diner. So I watched it. I was like, wait a second, I know where that is. But it's a really beautiful little movie. And I actually, that's another one that I shared with Nate. And I was like, it's kind of a rom-com, and I'm very protective of it because I think people are so easy to dismiss rom-coms. And so I'm kind of like, oh, it's a this, it's a that. It's kind of a rom-com. And Nate watched it.
It was amazing how much she, like, apologized for it ahead of time.
Which,
and
ugh.
I'm
disclaimer. You gave him lots of disclaimers.
Oh, my God,
I shouldn't have because it's a great film.
Well, I watch everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like, if it's presented to me, I mean, obviously we've mentioned movies that I, for some odd reason, hadn't seen mm-hmm. at a certain point. But, like, I'm down to watch anything because I can learn from anything. And so, like, you don't need to temper things. But it was just so amazing. It was like, well, but it's this. And it's like, oh, and I was like, oh, let's just watch it. And for me, like, I had never heard of it. And so it's definitely, not that I have my finger on the pulse of what's overrated or underrated or anything along those lines, but I hadn't even, you know, heard of it. And it was really, I love Zoe Kazan in anything that she's in. And it was cool for me because that was the first role that I saw Daniel Radcliffe in where he, like, wasn't Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually was able to showcase his charmingness, his,
he's
like,
so
sex appeal.
He's so charming. You will fall in love with Daniel Radcliffe if you watch that movie. He's so freaking cute in that
movie. It was really
movie.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I laughed. I cried. Like, it was actually, like, a full experience. And it was a good story.
Mm-hmm. So I love that one. That's up there. So that's my...
And Nate just used the word overrated. Are you gonna?
Oh, I got overrated.
Jump on the overrated.
Okay, so I'm gonna say my overrated. But if someone else has said it, I can backtrack and come up with something else.
This is yours.
People are allowed to. Yeah, okay. There's repeats. It's fun when people agree.
The newest Star is Born.
The newest Star is Born.
Mm-hmm. The Bradley Cooper Gaga one.
I haven't heard that one yet. Okay. It's an overrated.
So I will really quick say some nice things about it because if you don't have anything nice to say, you shouldn't say anything at all. So I'll just set myself up by saying, the performances are incredible. Lady Gaga is a stellar actress. Bradley Cooper really acted his butt off in it. and the music is really fun. I really liked those elements of it. And you know what? I actually think I probably enjoyed the Cinderella story-esque first act of the movie. But for me, the story was not there. And because I'm first and foremost a writer, if the story's not there, I can't enjoy the movie. And I think people are hailing it as this amazing, incredible, out there movie. And I'm like, the story was fine. The performances are fine. It's a very flashy movie.
Right.
But I think it actually lacks, like, a really clear storyline. I don't think they ever really paid off what they were trying to set up where he was, like, accusing her of selling out. They never really followed up on any of that. I think that for a movie called A Star Is Born, they need to stop making movies that are about the men that are the dying stars next to the women who are being born. And there were just a lot of choices in it that I didn't feel like made sense. I'm like, are we supposed to like her? Are we not supposed to like her? Are we supposed to feel sorry for him? Are we supposed to hate him? It wasn't clear to me. And that's a problem in the storytelling because that's not like an open to interpretation. That's, in my opinion, lazy writing.
And I mean, also, you know, it's a question of the choices that the director made.
Mm-hmm.
I agree on this being an overrated movie. It was an unpopular opinion when it came out, but it's we saw it as part of a triple feature one day at the DGA.
That was fun.
There was a Q&A after each one of them. So we started with Bad Times at El Royale.
Which is really fun, by the way.
Theater was full. Guy gets
Drew Goddard got to come up and talk, which was cool.
Drew Goddard comes up afterwards, and he gets to talk, and he gets a, you know, a standing ovation. Well-deserved. Second movie of the day is...
A Star Is Born.
A Star Is Born with, you know, writer-director Bradley Cooper and star afterwards. And, it's going to be moderated by Jason Bateman. And, oh, my God, the lines are out the door. We need to open up Theater 2 and Theater 3. And like, so these people are not even going to be in the same
people
room.
People are applauding for 15 minutes before the Q&A can even start.
Yes. So he gets this, like, he gets this amazing. And we're in the Directors Guild of America. I would understand the praise if we were in SAG-AFTRA or something along those lines. But it's just like, all right, so there's that. And we get to the third movie of the day, which was arguably one of my, like, top three of the year, which was Beautiful Boy. And once again, there's a Q&A after there with, you know, the writer director. There are probably 50 people in the theater that can seat, you know, 450. Nobody's in Theater 2 because we don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, I stood to give him an ovation, but it was, like, one of three people who was actually standing, and everybody else did clap. But he comes out, and he's just like, thank you, guys, thank you, guys. I was like, this is so strange to me. Mm-hmm. It's that star appeal. But it was very frustrating because on a day that was about, you know, we're in the Directors Guild Theater, it was, in my opinion, of just those three that day, mm-hmm. the weakest of the directing.
Yeah. And it's also my other thing about it. I don't want to get all grumpy about like, oh, it's a commercial film. I literally just told you that three of my favorites are those big epic adventures that broke all the records back whenever they came out. But there's just, it has to earn it. And to me, it never mm-hmm. earned it. And Bradley Cooper got all this praise for it being his first feature, his directorial debut. Great. It's awesome that it's your directorial debut. Most directors for their debut do not get that kind of budget, that kind of prep time, that kind of everything going into it. So it feels like he got this like underdog recognition, like, oh, your debut. Good for you, man. This is such a strong debut. It's like he had so many opportunities that so many people didn't because he's Bradley Cooper. And look, everything I've heard about Bradley Cooper is that he is a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I am so happy for him that he had that opportunity, but I don't necessarily think that the story merited all of the dressing that it got.
And I always point out, what you're reacting to, you're saying it's overrated just because of the accolades. You're not saying it's a bad film.
No,
you're saying
it's fine.
The 15-minute ovation, you're saying it was a bit, the reaction to it was a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That and the fact that I tell people I don't like it and they're like ready to murder me while singing Shallow at the top of their lungs.
And my one of my gripes with it mm-hmm. was that in addition to just being jealous, obviously, of the critical reception that he got, was also the misuse of Matthew Libatique, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Is the cinematographer that shot all of Aronofsky's movies and
yes.
that I love, that I grew up like that raw grittiness. There were just so many shots in the movie that I didn't, there were some that I absolutely loved. Like the whole sequence where she's singing and he falls in love with her in the first sequence, beautifully done. But like the whole final scene, there was so much camera movement that I didn't find motivated. And I wondered where that came in and what was happening and how much of it was just, I don't know. it was not my favorite of his outings either. And I'm a huge Matthew Labatique fan.
He's great.
Yes. He's so talented. And I was disappointed in the cinematography solely because it wasn't in line with what my expectation is of his with when he's working with somebody like Darren Aronofsky.
Well, he was being loyal to the project.
Absolutely.
To what it needed.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
he's cool.
Yeah.
I loved it. But I haven't, but she didn't, I went and saw it without her just because I had to see it before doing my Oscar predictions.
That's fair.
I had to run out and see it. But I plan to watch it on HBO again. I'm curious what I'll think the second time.
Yeah. Sure. For me, it was the story and the message kind of fell apart in the second and third act.
Well, what I said to another pair of a male and female, actually, she produces and he writes and then actually someone else directs, but I was like, you know, why weren't the gender roles reversed this time? Like, why wasn't Bradley Cooper the one discovered by, you know, a Lady Gaga level performer? Oh,
that could be cool.
Yeah.
You know, the woman being the one with the power to make a career.
Three times where the guy helps the girl come up. Why couldn't it be switched?
Yeah.
That would already make it more interesting for me.
Totally. Absolutely. Especially now. I mean, it's like why does a talented woman need to be discovered by this man?
Yep.
You know, this troubled man. Yep. Why do we need that?
Yeah.
I don't know. As you said, we've seen it.
Yeah, we've seen it. Yeah. But we haven't seen, you know, someone like Madonna find young talent and raise it.
Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome.
Be cool.
Be pretty cool.
All right. A Star is Born, the fifth version.
Because there'll definitely be another one in the middle.
Great.
But yeah, so that's my overrated.
Almost as good as the film A Porn Star is Born. Which I'm sure exists, but I just made that.
Isn't that like the rule of the internet? If you can think it, there's porn of it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your fourth, and it's funny because your underrated probably could have been the lesser known that people should seek out, because I didn't know What If, but... what's your lesser known that people should seek out?
So this is one that I think Nate's actually going to have a lot to speak to, because I know he was about to tell you about this movie before we started recording. And I'm like, no, save it. Cause it's my one for people to seek out. It is a really, really, really lovely film called Plus One.
Mm-hmm.
It is, what's her name? Maya Erskine. She's the star and creator of Pen 15. The guy in it is, who is it? Is it? He's got a famous last name, so I know I should remember. But his performance stands on his own. It is a really, really, really great movie about a couple of friends who have a bunch of weddings lined up and decide to go together, so that it's not so awful and they're not going alone. And because of the nature of film, of course they fall in love. But it is done in such a funny, charming. Thank you. Jack Quaid. See, that's why. I think it's Dennis Quaid's kid. I told you he had a famous last name. And he's great in it, too. It is a really, really, really lovely movie. It's everything I love about What If. It's unexpected. It's funny. It's smart. Her performance is incredible. Her character in it is my favorite for everything. I love her in it. And there's also probably the most wonderful scene between a parent and a child that I've seen in a very long time in this movie, in which, spoiler alert, the male lead has a conversation about, you know, abandonment with his father while his father is high on, I think, mushrooms or something.
Yes.
Or LSD. It's a great, great sequence. And it's just a really great movie. And I had not really heard much about it until it came across, you know, the Amazon recommendations. And I'm really glad it did, because more people should hear about it, because it is a great movie with some really talented people in it.
I'll watch it. Watch it.
It's really fun.
Isn't the Quaid kid in The Boys?
He might be. I haven't.
Think so.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I think so.
All right, now I'm willing to give it a chance because I really liked him in Plus One.
Oh, he's great.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was really good. Ed Begley Jr. plays his father in that scene, and that was one of the scenes that just like really spoke to me, because you know, it's played for laughs with the juxtaposition of, you know, the kid and what the father's going through, and that the kid is sober and he's driving the car and whatever else, and it ends on this beautiful note before the father passes out in the back seat. Where he just says this really, you know, sort of not necessarily life affirming, but relationship affirming, line to his son. There were just so many genuine moments in it, and it actually felt very real.
Their relationship as friends turning into a couple, and like,
yeah,
you're real with your friends in a way that you're not necessarily real with your significant other right off the bat. So the transition from like friends who have been through all this weird stuff together moving into a relationship is really funny.
Yeah.
Especially because her character is just so... I like that the character... It's not like a full-on Amy Schumer and train wreck kind of situation, but the female lead, she does not have to apologize for anything. And that's really cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, visually, there were, for you know, such an indie film, there were so many beautifully choreographed one takes.
Oh my gosh, the whole opening scene at the wedding. Oh, it's so good. It's so, so good.
There's this one scene where they're at a wedding. And I don't know if it's the opening one that you're talking about, but it's they're on the dance floor and you weave as one.
That's the one.
Oh, that's the one. Okay. All right. I was trying to remember where it took place in the film. It's you start on the dance floor and you go over to, you weave through the tables. You go to this one conversation. So you check in with this other couple and you have this like back and forth. And then you follow the guy once again, all the way to the table and he goes to go grab her. And then you go all the way back to the dance floor and you dance with them. And the camera just moves and is motivated by the pacing.
It's beautiful.
The two of them. So it was awesome from top to bottom. And it was funny timing wise, because I hadn't heard of it. I'm fortunate enough that I live in Los Feliz, and Los Feliz 3 Cinemas is right there, and they're usually playing really great indie movies. And I just happened to see it on the marquee, and I was like, plus one, I've never heard of that. And I went home and I looked it up that night, because you were coming over, and came across it on Amazon, because it was an Amazon movie and it was getting a limited theatrical release in indie cinemas, and we just watched it because we watched the trailer and we were like, this looks great.
I want to watch that. It's also such a relatable thing.
So did you watch it on Amazon or you walk over to the theater?
Watch it on Amazon.
Yeah. That was a lazy choice, but
absolutely.
It was
but interesting that the synergy worked of Amazon putting it in theaters.
Totally.
Absolutely.
That was marketing.
So got us to watch the movie.
That got you to watch it at home.
Yeah.
And to love it.
Oh,
and the other thing that's so nice about it is we're at the age right now where everyone is getting married. Mm-hmm. And you do have like, oh God, I have to go to 7 weddings this year. And so right off the bat, I'm hooked on the premise. I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right. All right. Give me a funny movie about it at least. And not even expecting to get nearly the wonderful, joyful journey that movie took me on.
Yeah. And it's not just funny either. It's hard.
No, it is. It's in the same way that I talk about What If and people are so dismissive of rom-coms. These are such beautiful studies of the experience of being human. Mm-hmm. And it's a really nice reminder that you can study the human experience in a way that's not necessarily just sad and depressing.
Yeah.
It can actually leave you feeling really, it's cathartic, but at the end you also can feel really happy and hopeful. And I love it for that.
And those were Rosie Grace's answers to the Discovery Indie Film 4 questions. Super fun list. In fact, I have to say that I couldn't be more excited about watching What If and Plus One. In fact, when Rosie gave this list, I'd never watched Pen 15. And then I think 2 years ago before lockdown, I watched Pen 15 and fell deeply in love with it. Oh my God, it's one of the funniest, smartest, most well-written shows on TV. It's on Hulu. And the idea that one of the leads, one of the co-creators of that show, Maya Erskine, is in Plus One. I'm going to have to watch Plus One right away. And now comes the time for the housekeeping, as I call it. Here's all the links you need to know about. These films that Rosie and Nate have made have become mainstays at both the Sherman Oaks Film Festival and Film Invasion LA. Sherman Oaks Film Festival is every November, and you can learn about it at ShermanOaksFF.com, and on social media, it's at ShermanOaksFF. And Film Invasion LA is every June, and you can learn about that by going to FilmInvasionLA.com or FilmInvasionLA. It's just at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And the Discover Indie Film Podcast has an extension into the TV series world. If you go to Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, there are 4 seasons, 10 episodes each, of the best short films you're going to see. They are handpicked from the festival circuit, so I can promise you they're damn good. I don't think there's anything else to say, so thanks for listening.